Vectis Radio. We're not just another station, we're your station. Broadcasting live and local around the clock on FM 104.6. And now on DAB.
Welcome to Maggie Talks To, a series of in-depth conversations with people who live and work here on the Isle of Wight. I'm here today with Graham Biss. Hello.
Hello, Maggie.
Thank you so much for joining me for this interview. I wanted to find out more about you, the person, and I'm sure one of our listeners would be really interested to know. So were you actually born here on the island?
No, I'm an outsider, I'm afraid. I was born in Somerset, a dairy farming family,
right.
And that's where my two brothers continued to farm.
Right. And did you do any farming whilst you were there?
Oh, we did. We did. We very much were brought up in a business, and the business came first. So when my father decided he wanted to do something, everyone connected with the family were involved. And really it shaped many of the things which all three of us followed, that work comes first. And literally when the sun shines, you went off and did whatever the head of the family wanted you to do.
Right. So in the summer holidays, the school holidays, did you have to go and do harvesting or milking or delivering milk? Or
Yeah, from as long as I think any of us can remember, we were taught to drive a tractor and we were expected to do what the business, what the farm needed. So, yes, I used to milk cows, drive tractors, and all the things associated with farming.
And did you enjoy doing that?
I did. I was the youngest of three. And as with many farming businesses, the eldest brother took the business on and still farms the family business to this day.
So he's 25 now, yeah?
Yeah, he's a little bit older than that. So he's still farming. And I enjoyed it. And there was an expectation that my middle brother went off to do something else. He became a chartered surveyor. And there was an expectation that I would probably follow my older brother into the business. But when I got to that point, I wanted to go off and do something a bit different.
Mm-hmm.
But still very much connected with agriculture. I think it literally is in the blood. And I have most of my friends and contacts are involved with the industry in one shape or the other.
That's good. So whilst you were at school, I presume you went to school as well?
I did, yeah. Yep.
Did you have any aspirations as to what it is you wanted to do, like a train driver or pilot? Or?
Well, I think the first career I always wanted to do was practice as a policeman.
All right.
But my parents did steer me quite heavily towards agriculture. So I spent the 12 up to 16 at an agricultural school.
Right.
And funny enough, that persuaded me not to go into agriculture because everyone around me wanted to be farmers. And I guess you sort of look at that and I thought, actually, I want to go and do something different. But I didn't know what. So I took my A-levels, got a place at university to read.
Which one?
Reading.
Right.
But then I decided I didn't want to go to university.
Okay.
And I had my father in my ear saying, well, you ought to go and get a job. Because I think it was a different age group.
Yeah.
And dad was very much, well, you know, you've done your education, go and earn a living. And when I said I didn't want to come home, I went and joined NatWest Bank.
All right.
Because I didn't know what to do. And at that time, sort of the banks were held up as being pillars of our community. So I went and joined NatWest Bank.
Right. And what did you do there?
Very first thing I did was make the tea. It was in those days where you really did start at the bottom.
And did you make the tea properly?
No, I was and I'm a terrible tea maker to this day. And I think they all took the view that I tried to make it really badly so I didn't have to make it very often. And it worked. Because I think within a very short period of time, the girls in the office all went, oh, Graham.
Please don't.
But the next job was to answer the telephone.
Right.
And that was nerve-wracking because you're the youngest, the most inexperienced, and you're being asked. You're answering the telephones and you literally didn't know what the questions were going to be. But no, I certainly enjoyed it.
Were there any difficult questions that you really couldn't answer?
I'm sure there were. There were many questions which I couldn't answer. But I worked in the local branch which was really quite nice because I knew a lot of the people coming into the branch, and you felt part of the community.
Mm. It's all changed now, hasn't it?
It has changed. And I stayed with NatWest for 20 years, and they invested very heavily in me as an individual, and gave me wonderful insights. So I'm quite loyal to NatWest. But when I left, you could see it was changing rapidly. And it's changed very much, which is a real shame, but I guess that's a sign of the time.
Certainly is. So what did you do next?
Well, I went through, so I started our local branch at Castle Carey, and I went through a series of branches in the southwest, and then eventually ended up in Exeter at the regional office, which was a very pressurised role. I was in the regional lending team. And you worked very, very long hours under quite intense pressure, which I must admit, I look back on now as an achievement, but at the time I probably didn't enjoy it. I probably wasn't quite good enough to do the role which I was asked to do, but I learned an awful lot. And I think that's something you learn through your career is quite often the hard times are the times which you really develop and you learn, but it's not always easy to live through. And I can remember we would work very, very long hours because if your manager wanted something, he expected it.
Now.
Yeah.
Or yesterday.
Yesterday. but good friendships, learnt an awful lot. And at that point, the family called and said, come on, come back to the farm. And I resigned from NatWest to go back to the farm. And NatWest very kindly didn't want me to leave. So they offered me a position in their National Agricultural Office in Coventry.
Oh, I didn't know there was one.
Yeah, there was. Based up in Coventry to be near the Royal Showground.
So
at that time, the Royal Show was the agricultural event in the farming calendar. And they offered me a job in Coventry. And I went for an interview just out of curiosity because I'd already resigned from the bank. And I went up and met the then managing director, the top man for agriculture. And I thought, this is really interesting. So I went back to the family and said, I've been offered this job in Coventry. I'd like to take it. And after lots of in lots of different viewpoints. I then went to Coventry for 3 years, working in the National Agricultural Office, and it was really interesting. So I got to meet lots of people and helping to shape the bank's strategy and approach to agriculture, which is really quite good fun.
Wasn't it? Yeah. So were you married at this time?
No, I was single. But I did meet my wife. She came and joined the agricultural office after about a year of, I'd been there for a year, and soon my wife came and joined me, and that's where we met. So
and the rest is history.
The rest is history, and whether I should say it, but I was her, probably about the only time I was her boss, because I was her boss, and obviously things have evolved since then.
Say no more.
Say no more, absolutely. I'll get in terrible trouble if I expand upon that.
So after 3 years in Coventry, where did you go then?
Well, I said to my boss, I said, I'd like to go back to the southwest because that was my home. And we'd set up a strategy of putting managers, agriculture managers, into key agricultural locations. And I said to him, you finished with me. Can I go back to the southwest? So I came back to be, at that moment in time, the youngest agricultural manager in the country in the southwest in Bridgewater. And I was very lucky throughout my career with NatWest, is being in the right place at the right time. And when I was in the regional lending department, I would spend most of the time looking after agricultural clients. Well, I knew agriculture. I was very familiar with the industry. And if I didn't know, I knew someone who did. So I was just very lucky that each time I landed on my feet and I went back to Bridgewater in a fantastic agricultural area, and I spent the time building the branch is business in agriculture. And I still keep in contact with a number of my ex-customers. And I was just being paid to do something I really enjoyed.
That can't be bad, can it?
No, absolutely. And I'm a big fan that you've got to enjoy work.
Yes.
You know, we spend...
If you don't enjoy it, there's no point, is it?
Yeah. And I was just very lucky. I ended up with a client base of about 230. And I would say the very, very large majority, I really enjoyed the company. And I
there's always one.
Yeah, there was probably two or three, and I can still remember the two or three, but the vast majority were absolutely brilliant. And I enjoyed working for the industry, even though NatWest paid me. I always felt that we were there to support farming clients, because if we get that right, the bank's business was correct.
It's good, isn't it?
Hmm.
So did you have your own cow? You took around to each branch?
No, I didn't. And you could, on the windowsill here, I've got my herd of cows, with the toy cows. That's the nearest I ever got to having my own.
You're in your own cows. So you're in Bridgewater.
Yep.
And you've been enjoying that. Where should you go from there?
I was then approached by a firm of agricultural consultants, and I did enjoy my time with NatWest, but still quite career orientated. And the bank were very kind to me. They put me on to their senior development program, which meant they trained me. And I used to spend 1 week a month in London on various training courses. But things had changed, and probably the next job would have been very much managing people rather than dealing with clients.
Right.
And I think the culture had changed where it was very much performance driven. So you were really driving your colleagues to deliver performance.
Targets and things.
Yeah. And I really thought that wasn't for me, because I enjoyed being out with my wellies on, out with real people doing real things. So a firm of consultants who I had worked alongside for a while came to me and said, look, we want to bring in people to our business, completely different to an agricultural consultant. We've seen you operate. Would you come in and lead our Southwest team? And I thought, actually, why not? I'd spent 20 years with NatWest, man and boy. So why not go and do something different? So I went out to become the consultant partner for the Southwest of England, which meant I had Cornwall, Devon, Dorset and Somerset under my umbrella, and just to go and do something completely different, which I enjoyed. I think I must be the world's worst consultant, because I'm not a great one for telling people what to do. Mm-hmm. I like to shape things. I like to support, but I don't necessarily want to dictate to people, no, you must do this. But again, really enjoyed working with a different group of people, doing different things, learned an awful lot, learned, again, connected to agriculture because they were dairy consultants. So that core remained, the people were the same. But I spent, I think that was about 4 years as their consultant partner. And I, again, met lots of really interesting people. And I think that's what you do in a career, doesn't it? You sort of pick people up,
yes,
people who you align to and you respect, and they sort of build you as an individual. So that's, yeah, a really interesting time.
That's good. And, of course, you had Sue with you.
Sue, yes. She did
come with you from Coventry.
She did. And then, obviously, family arrived, and we've got four boys. So, yeah, they were very instrumental.
So you had to keep working.
Yes, absolutely.
Mouths to feed.
Yeah. But we were back in the Southwest, back with my family all around us. And the Southwest is, or Somerset, similar to the island, very community focused. And I can remember when I moved back to Bridgewater, after about 2 weeks, I phoned my mum and said, Mum, you really have got to come down and draw out the family tree, because I had so many people ringing me up saying, you do realise you're my second cousin. And I didn't know that, so I had to spend quite a bit of time with my mum and say, look, can you just plot who are these people?
Who's this?
Yeah. Because everyone's related to everyone else.
Ah, right. Well, we're going to take a short break now for some adverts and we'll be back in a minute.
Okay.
Vectis Radio, we're more than just a station. We're your voice, your choice. FM 104.6. And now on DAB.
I'm here with Graham Bistill, and we're just going to continue our conversation. So you've, you're in Bridgewater, and you've done 3 or 4 years there. Where'd you go from there?
Well, that's where I went into consultancy.
Yes.
And spent, I think it was 4 years.
Was that still in Bridgewater?
That was working from home.
Oh, right.
Which was a new experience for me.
Yeah.
As opposed to going into a branch or an office every day and started to work from home.
Yeah.
Again, if I'm honest, it was great in some respects. But I think the relationship of work to home life, which I'm not very good at because I can't differentiate between the two terribly well. I probably missed not having the people around me. And I think that's true what we've seen COVID. And
I think a lot of people have said that, haven't
you? Yeah. So whilst I don't necessarily need to have lots of people around me, I think that structure of belonging to something and having regular links with colleagues, I missed, if I'm honest.
Yeah. So did you have social events like a Christmas or anything like that?
We did, but I covered 4 counties and they were spread right across those 4 counties. So,
and you've got to be everywhere.
Yeah. And again, enjoyed my time there, met some really bright people. But it wasn't quite the same as that office structure where you felt part of that smaller team.
So you felt we needed to move on to something else?
So I was then approached by another bank, Clydesdale Bank approached me, who wanted to, which was part of the National Australian Bank, and they were very keen to expand their coverage in the Southwest. So I spent 12 months developing their client base, agricultural client base. And it was whilst I was at the Clydesdale that we came back to the island. Sue, my wife, is an islander, even though she'd left at 18 to go to Newcastle University and never came back. Well, it's a true story. We came back to, unfortunately, bury her mum.
Oh, dear.
And she looked at me and said, I'd like to come back to the island to live. And we had 4 boys and they were at an age. And I said, well, if we're going to do it, now is the time to do it. And I'd realised that our eldest was 12 years old and I'd hardly seen him because I'd been off following a career.
Yeah.
And we thought, well, actually, now is the time, if we're going to do it, for the sake of the boys, we'll do it immediately. And I think that was about February. And I think it was April, we moved back to the island. The Clydesdale were keen to retain me. And they said, well, actually, you can go and work in Portsmouth or out of the Portsmouth branch. But I declined that because the whole point was to actually re-establish the family. And if I was going to be spending every day traveling off to the mainland,
defeats the object.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
So we moved to the island, and that was 20 years ago. So
and have you regretted it?
Well, I never look back. I always look forward. I miss some of the contact with my broader family in Somerset, and my parents never really understood why we moved from Somerset to the island, if I'm honest. But I certainly don't regret it. And the island's a fantastic place.
Isn't it just?
Yeah. So I very much, I am still an outsider. I've only been here 20 years, but very much I see the island as home.
That's nice, isn't it?
Hmm.
So how did you get involved with all the things that go on, like the Royal County Show? How did you get involved in that?
Oh, gosh, that's a long journey. But when I came to the island, I did carry on doing some consultancy work in the Southwest. A former bank and consultancy client said, well, still come in, work for us. So I used to go across 3 days a week to Somerset and stay with friends and service a client base. But there was a job advertised with the then Isle of Wight Economic Partnership, managing director, Mike Kim. And Mike obviously sussed me out completely because in the interview, he told me that we only have one economic partnership, which means there's a real opportunity to make a difference and to change things, because if we approach things in the right way, everything's possible. Well, for someone like me, that's compelling. So they appointed me as the finance director. And then,
is that because of all the banking?
Because of our background. Yeah. I saw lots of skills within the finance sector. So they appointed me as the finance director. And then Mike left and there was lots of changes. The public sector was going through austerity, where instead of it being very lots of money, they were cutting back, and the economic partnership was no longer required.
Oh.
So they appointed the then finance director to shut it down, which is quite often the case. If you're going to shut a business down, you've got a financial person to manage that exit. And I took that role in December with a view to the direction was to shut it down by the end of the financial year, 31st of March. But along that journey, both myself and the then chairman said, well, actually, we do some really good stuff. Can we not try and make a go of this without the financial support from the Honorwhite Council and the then Southeast Economic Development Agency? Mm-hmm. And that's what we did. So bit by bit, we built the business up. That then changed into Natural Enterprise,
yes.
Which included the Ireland 2000 Trust. Mm-hmm. We brought, and I can go into some detail on that, but that was a natural coming together, two very different organisations. We created Natural Enterprise, and that's the charity which I still work for 20 years later.
And what does Natural Enterprise do?
Natural Enterprise.
Those that don't know.
Okay. Small island-based charity. Mm-hmm. And we've got two main focuses. One is rural development.
Right.
And one is the natural environment. And we wanted to bring those two disciplines together in the belief that probably one of the island's greatest assets is its natural environment and its natural beauty. And there's an economic element to that, because mm-hmm. if you don't have the two together, you can have a wonderful environment, but if it's not financially sustainable, it's not going to stay in that way. So that's the two main themes. And off the back of that, if there's something which we think we can do well, or there isn't something better placed on the island, we'll have a go. So we get involved with lots of different things. We support the county show. We've supported some small grant schemes. We're running the White Royal Hub. And we've also got an initiative called Gift to Nature, where we manage 32 open access countryside sites where anyone can go and enjoy them, you know, and just be in the countryside.
Yeah.
So we've got lots, and that's just a snapshot. We do lots of different things, but they're always under those two themes, either the rural economy or the natural environment. And I'm really lucky, again, surrounded by some brilliant people, very committed to what they do. And we hope and believe we make a contribution to our local place.
I'm sure you do.
Mm. Well, so we might not be doing the big glamorous things, but we're doing the things which hopefully make an impact to real people and here on the island.
And you've got yourself involved in the Royal County Show.
Absolutely. The motto there is not to miss a meeting. The story which I quite often tell, a lady called Amy Wilcock, who was then the proprietor of the George Hotel in Yarmouth. Mm-hmm. Amy, quite a brash American, I'm sure she wouldn't mind me describing her as that. But Amy decided that she wanted to revive the county show, which had fallen on difficult times. The then committee were absolutely brilliant, but all of an age, fewer in number, and it was becoming quite a challenge. So Amy, with great gusto, wanted to get involved. And she phoned me up one day and said, you know about agriculture, don't you? And I went, no. She said, you're coming to a meeting with me. So I went to this meeting, and Amy was determined that she was going to revive the county show. And I said, that's fine, Amy. You revive the county show, generate lots of money, because I can think of lots of ways of spending it. So that was sort of the proposal, that she was going to revive the county show, generate income, and we could put into supporting young people to come into the industry and just supporting the agricultural sector. But after 2 years, she left the island.
Yeah.
And somehow I became the county show chairman.
Right.
So
just in the right place at the right time.
Yes.
Again.
Yeah. And I just carried on. Amy had changed lots of things. She brought lots of really, really good people together, and that was her skill. And I've just carried on from what she'd started. And again, it's all about people. And we've got some really, really good people, really committed to taking forward the island's show. And here's where.
Which is an agricultural show, basically, isn't it? I mean, it has lots of other things in it.
It is. It's slightly more complicated than that. It is an agricultural show, and the heart of the show will always be the rural aspects. So the livestock and the equine and the woodland areas are absolute core and will always be core to the show. But quite rightly, we now reflect the broader aspects of life on the island, and we've got a brilliant...
The whole community type.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And very island-focused. So all of our craftspeople, all of our artists are island. Everyone in the food pavilion are island businesses. And we very much... It's a celebration and a showcase for everything which is brilliant on the Isle of Wight. And that's how we see the show.
And, of course, so, a WI tent.
Absolutely.
With your wife.
Yes. Yeah.
Has to be done.
It has to be done. And we've got key partners. You know, you guys are with us every year. The WI are with us every year. And we want to embrace all those facets of the island. And what's really nice is somehow about 27% of the attendance come from the mainland. And we don't know how and why, but certainly all the feedback we get is people love coming to the island.
That's good.
To the show. And the show has a really friendly, relaxed atmosphere.
Yeah.
And again, that's down to people.
And it's easily accessed, isn't it? Because you've got the bus that stops outside.
Yeah, yeah.
Or the car park,
yeah,
or whatever.
Yeah. So the show has grown. It's grown quite significantly.
It used to be sort of one day, didn't it, for many hundreds of years ago when the kids had the day off school. And
well, I think it's probably two. It's had different durations. It's been 2 days, 3 days, 1 day. And you're right. It was a time when it was during the week and all the school children would have a day off school.
Yeah.
I'm not sure we're ever going to see that come back. But what's important is lots of memories of the show, and I think that's what we're trying to do now is create new memories. And a big focus is on the younger people. So we have under 16s, for instance, are free because we want to create some memories for young people.
Yes,
and we hope. You know, we're just custodians. We're the current custodians of the show, which next year will be the 125th show.
Wow.
Which is quite a milestone.
You haven't been involved in all of them.
No, not at all. But it is a milestone, and it's a really important milestone. But we're just current custodians of it. And I sincerely hope that when we stop and the next group come through, that we pass it on to them in a better condition is what we found. And that's not saying it was under neglect. It was just you could see the pressure.
Yes.
That, you know, an aging group of people having to do more and more with less and less.
Yes.
And that's why a lot of these events and shows have disappeared.
The trouble is that you've got this show that you want to put on, not your show, but a show, and you've got three people involved. And they're the only ones to do any work. The rest go, I don't know what to do.
Yeah.
And it's too much for them to cope with.
Yeah. And that's what we're really lucky. Amy tremendous credit back to Amy. Amy recruited very wisely, and she brought in lots of people who are doers. And I inherited a group of people who really were very committed and make the show. But it is like feeding the monster.
Yes.
It's been great to see it grow and develop. But as it grows and develops, it has more and more needs.
Mm-hmm.
So it has been a.
There's more and more costs involved, I imagine, as well.
And also, with society as it is now, more and more regulations and requirements.
Insurances, licenses. Yeah.
To manage an outdoor event is a challenge at the best of times.
Yeah.
It has become even more challenging. And when you think about the component parts, we talk about children, we talk about animals, we talk about food.
Never work with animals and children.
Absolutely, and we're trying to do all of that.
Magic. We're going to take another break for some more adverts. We'll be back in a minute.
Okay. Vectis Radio, keeping you connected to the pulse of our island. Always fresh and always local. FM 104.6. And now on DAB.
Right, we're back now with Graham Biss. You're still with us.
Absolutely.
Good. Now tell me how you became a deputy lieutenant. How did you get involved in that?
Well, I guess it's relatively straightforward. The Lord Lieutenant, Susie Sheridan, came to see me one day and said, would I become a deputy? And if I'm honest with you, I wasn't quite sure what that meant. But after speaking to Susie and a little bit of research, obviously a huge honour to be her deputy. And in a very small way, represent the island.
Yes. There's more than one deputy, isn't there?
She can have up to about, I think it's 20.
Oh, right.
So there are quite a few of us. And we're very much here to support her as the King's representative on the island.
Yeah. And you get involved in ceremonies and things like that, do you?
You do. From a personal point of view, the aspects which are fantastic is you get involved with the community.
Yeah.
And you get to realise what a strong community we are. We may not be the biggest. We may not be even the best, but we really do have a strong sense of community on the islands, strong sense of place. And I think that sets us apart from many other areas.
There's generally a big pride in the island, isn't there?
Yeah. It sometimes works against us because people are very proud and very focused on their particular patch and perhaps not aware of what goes on slightly broader across the island. But no, a real sense of place.
Oh, that's good. So you enjoy doing that?
Very much so. And then I was obviously a huge honour to be asked to be the High Sheriff.
Yes.
Which thoroughly enjoyed it. And
But whilst you were the High Sheriff, you couldn't do the Deputy Lieutenant? Wait.
No, I did more year when I was the High Sheriff, and I'm sure this is true of all the previous and current High Sheriffs. Huge honour to spend time engaging with, attending events of the community and voluntary sector and the public sector.
Did you have second thoughts about it? Think, I can't do this, or think, oh, actually, I do want to do it?
Well, I think my greater concern is, would I be good enough? Am I worthy of the role? Because if you look at the people who have done it historically, I probably wouldn't consider myself to be in that class. But people said, well, you must be true to yourself.
Absolutely.
And that's what we tried to be. And my wife, Sue, we did it together. And I think that's quite important to form those strong partnerships. We did it together, and we were just very ordinary people doing an extraordinary role working with extraordinary people.
Yes.
And it was just, I thought I knew the community sector quite well because of working for a local charity, but you just don't fully understand or appreciate the depth and the breadth and the commitment which many, many people make to our community.
And you find out there's so many more charities and CICs than you ever thought.
Yes. And you come across people, they haven't been volunteering for 10 or 15 years. They've been doing it for 25, 30, 35 years. And they do it week in, week out, as a complete commitment to their organization or their club or whatever it is, in a selfless way. And I got to meet, within the Western Division, there are 7 high sheriffs, which you meet mm-hmm. your counterparts, and got to know them quite well. And every time I used to come back from meetings thinking, there's nowhere else I'd rather be the high sheriff for than the Isle of Wight, because we are smaller, but we're much better connected.
Yes.
And I know each year, high sheriff has its own legal service, and we attended Exeter Cathedral, Salisbury Cathedral, and other fantastic Winchester Cathedral. But our service is in Newport Minster, which perhaps isn't as grand as those other, but our service was very much rooted within the community.
Yes.
And all the high sheriffs kept saying to me, we just loved your service because we felt part of it, rather than we're in a grand building at another service. And I think that epitomises to me the island, that we might not be as grand as other locations, but the really important things we're still in touch with.
So is there anything that particularly stands out for you for your year as High Sheriff?
I think it was just the sheer commitment of so many people who contribute so much. And it was just such an honour to have an invite to go in and join them and have a small insight.
So where did the invitation come from?
From the Red. What, to be a...
Be the High Sheriff.
Well, that's quite a complex. There is a selection committee.
Right.
Who sit privately and assess would-be candidates.
Right.
And then...
obviously, you met the grade, so...
Well, or they perhaps mixed me up with someone else. They probably got my name wrong.
They didn't.
They thought, we wanted him, but we've got him. But no, the rest, powers to be, obviously consider whether you're appropriate. Names have to go up to the king to ensure that you're consistent with what he would like to see happen. And then you're approached. You have quite a long leading time, so there are always 4 high sheriffs either announced or in selection to ensure that the role carries on. And it's a wonderful role because you get all the best invites to all the best occasions, but you're there as without any responsibilities in terms of political or duties of office. I think I spent most of the year willingly just saying thank you to people for their contribution, which they make to our community. So brilliant role, thoroughly enjoyed it.
Anything you didn't enjoy? The tights, perhaps?
Well, yeah. Well, you say that. You always get, I shouldn't admit this, should I? You almost, that's part of the role.
Of course it is, yes.
And I'm not a terribly public person, but you put on the uniform.
Yes.
You assume the role of the High Sheriff.
Yes.
You're not really Graham Biss any longer. You're the High Sheriff.
Yeah.
And so it all became part of the package. Mm. And on the island in particular, people like to see their High Sheriff in the High Sheriff uniform.
Absolutely.
And I think that's different to the mainland. I would say in my year, probably 80% of the engagement, people wanted to see you in the High Sheriff uniform. Therefore, it was an honour to wear it, tights and all, which took a bit of getting used to. And I can assure you, I don't wear them any longer.
Sure you don't, no.
But I think that you appreciate that part of the role.
Yeah. Is there specific things you have to wear within the uniform? You have to have the breeches.
Yeah. It certainly from a male point of view, it's pretty well prescribed of what the court dress should be, and they get passed from one high sheriff to the next, Because, of course, once you've finished your year...
You don't need it.
You don't need it.
No.
And quite rightly, the new high sheriff is the new high sheriff.
Yes.
Yes, you don't need it after your year.
So what have you done with it? Passed it on to someone else?
I would like to sell it to someone else because it cost quite a lot of money to buy. But it's hanging up at the back of my wardrobe. I must look to move it on to a high sheriff.
Somebody, yeah. So you don't want to keep it for posterity?
No, that's not. I don't look. Even though I thoroughly enjoyed my years high sheriff, that's
perhaps, all done.
Yeah. You move on to whatever the next thing is, and lots of great memories, lots of great people I met. Such an honour to be a small representative of the island, because I think that was also quite important to me. That I was really proud. To represent the island in a small way. But no, I don't look back. You look forward to what comes next.
So you say you're not a people person. I'm not saying you're not a people person, but public speaking, did you find it difficult, first of all, to speak to people as the High Sheriff?
As the High Sheriff. Yes, because great responsibility, because you are there to represent the island and the role. So a huge responsibility to try and discharge it to the very best of your ability. I'm not a natural public speaker. Some people are. But I'm quite a person of conviction, and I was very convicted to try and do it to the best of my ability.
Yeah.
So, and I think that in life, that's all you can do. Is try and just do things as well as you possibly can.
Whenever I've heard you speak, and you've sounded very eloquent. So.
Oh, well, that's very kind.
I was just saying, did you find it sort of nerve-wracking to start with? Or?
No, but you just want to do it as well as you possibly can. I think I'm always comfortable in things which I understand. I'm one of these people that I need to understand what I'm doing, and if I understand
I think we all need to understand, don't we?
Some people can stand and hold forth and be comfortable, but I need to fully understand what my brief is, what the subject is. I love going to talk to people. You know, I did a number of speaking engagements where I can just sit on the edge of the table and just talk to people about
what
a role, and that I really enjoy, because you get so much back.
Yes.
But to stand in front of a big audience and perhaps undertake a reading or something, that wouldn't be my natural comfort zone.
Be a bit scary.
But saying that, still, for something which I wouldn't be comfortable with doing, you embrace.
Yes.
You know, you try and do it as well as you can, and you hope you hit the required standard, but that's part of the role. In a way, I quite enjoyed that, because it made me do things which I wouldn't naturally want to do.
So what's next?
What's next? Gosh.
What's next for Graham Biss?
Well, very much back with Natural Enterprise. I've got a brilliant team around me, great trustees. And I can just see lots of things which we want to continue to make a difference. We want to see the show continue to go forward. We want to contribute to do lots of things on the island where we're very, very lucky that we're, as a small charity, very island focused, that we can make that difference. So if someone knocks on the door and says, Graham, would Natural Enterprise do whatever it is? The measures are, can we do it well? Will it make a difference to our community? Are we the best people to do that? And if we get a tick in those three boxes and it fits within our sphere of activity, we'll have a go. We don't get everything right all of the time, but who does?
Nobody, I don't think.
No, but what I can assure you is we'll do it to the very best of our ability. And that's really exciting for someone who likes to get to do things, make a difference. You know, I'm just so lucky that I work for an organisation which is very much focused on doing that.
And you're going to stay here on the island?
Yes, I think so. Yeah, I this is home. Unfortunately, I've lost both my parents, so that draw to support them it has sort of diminished.
Yes.
Our four boys. two have left the island. Three left. One's come back. So it's like home in Pigeon. So I think that's what the island, sooner or later, it draws you back.
Yeah.
So it'd be nice to see, once they've done their mainland things,
whatever it is they're doing, yeah.
Yeah, perhaps come back, because family is quite important to us.
It's when you get on the ferry coming home, you think, I'm nearly home.
Yeah, 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 very much so. But there's still lots we want to do, lots of things we can do. And as long as...
What do you want to do?
Well, I just want us as a group of people, and that's the Natural Enterprise team, that we make a difference.
Yeah, I'm sure you do make a difference now.
Yeah.
You want to make more of a difference.
More of a difference.
Yeah.
And it's quite compelling that people come in and say, well, can you do this? Yeah, if we can, we'll have a go. Because we're just so lucky to live where we are. And I think as islanders, sometimes we look at the lots of good things. And of course, it's not everything's perfect on the island. It would be absolutely naive. But there's more things right than wrong.
Yes.
And I think we want to dwell on the positives and build on the positives. And just make a difference in a very low-level, community-based way. We leave the bigger, sexier things for people who are probably better equipped to do that, but we can make a difference.
You can. And I don't say this in an unkind way, but you do it behind the scenes, if you like. You're not a big, brash, look at us, what we're doing. You just get on with it.
Yeah, and I think that's who we are. I think we're much more comfortable just doing things and making a difference. We don't need high profile. We don't need the Natural Enterprise name being shared with anyone.
No.
Because actually, I think we can make more of a difference by being that quiet organisation,
yes.
Trusted organisation, I hope.
Yes.
That we can make a difference because we're trusted to get on and do things. And that's what gets me up in the morning. Not, am I going to be covered in the local press or commenting upon in the Islandwide Council Chamber? I just want us to make a difference to who we are.
To get on with it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And we're in a position where we can do that.
Brilliant. It's been absolutely fascinating listening to you and how you've got from cows to doing this Natural Enterprise. I'll see the brain's gone. Going to do Natural Enterprise. Absolutely brilliant. Do you have a favourite tune that we could play at the end?
Well, I'm probably going to show my age now.
Yeah.
But I'm a big Fleetwood Mac fan.
Yeah.
And my favourite Fleetwood Mac tune is Dreams.
Okay, we shall play this at the end.
Okay, thank you very much.
Thank you, Gray. We'll be right back. If you would like to hear this or any other of the conversations again, go to the Vectis Radio webpage, vectisradio.com, and you can find it amongst the podcasts.
Vectis Radio, FM 104.6, your home for live and local broadcasting.